Welcome to Look Ahead Radio and Viewpoints Around the World. My name is Tom Arms, and in a moment I'll be joined by my old friend Lockwood Phillips. This week we're talking about tariffs and attempted murders against Russian spies in sleepy English towns. I hope you enjoy this week's edition. Thank you very much.
Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom's Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, of course, is joining us from London, England this evening, so we are pre-recording this portion of the program since it will be nearly midnight as we wrap things up this afternoon here on Viewpoints. But Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms. And Tom, I'm looking forward to this conversation. A variety of things I know that you've sent me notes on, one related to Russian involvement and Russian spies in the United Kingdom. But before we even get into all those details, I'm curious, what's the weather like in your hometown of London?
Well, it's warming up now, but as a result of the cold weather that we've had, pipes have been bursting all over the place. 20,000 homes in London have been cut off from water for at least a day or two. Some still don't have water. We were cut off for about a day and a half. We have still low water pressure, but a lot of it was really, really badly affected.
That is a surprise. Now, of course, we were chatting with you last week, and you had snow on the ground at the time. And I know that there's been snowfall out in certain areas of Great Britain that have not seen snow, in many, many, many years. What's the prediction now for the remainder of March?
Well, you know, it's warming up again. And the daffodils are starting to stick their heads up above the ground once again. But it's possible, they say, that it could turn cold again next week.
Well, it's getting cold here now. Of course, this is typical March for us. Now, what is March like for you there United Kingdom? There
in probably very similar. It's very changeable. All right. It could go either way.
Okay, I was just curious how the weather was lining up. All right, now let's talk about some of the events there. Since we're talking about the United Kingdom. Read an interesting story this morning in the Washington Post, a story that, well, I don't think is necessarily breaking news, but of interest. And that, of course, is the number of Russian immigrants who apparently are, the feeling is being poisoned by the homeland. What is the story here?
Well, we don't know for certain whether this chap has been poisoned, but he's an ex-Russian spy. Who was traded and given sanctuary in Britain. His name is Sergei, Sergei Shripal. Mm-hmm. And he and his daughter were both found slumping on a park bench in the quintessential British city of Salisbury, which is very near Stonehenge. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful place. And that's where they're living. She had come over from Russia for the anniversary of the death of her brother, who died at the age of 42 about 4 years ago. And it seems now as if they're reopening the case into his death as well, because they think that might have been suspicious circumstances. They are not absolutely certain, but they are at the moment pointing the fickle finger of fate at the Russian FSB. Which they are absolutely certain was responsible about 10 years ago for the poisoning of Litvinenko with polonium. There are 14 other cases which they were sort of not so certain of, and so they closed them. They put them down as natural causes. They're going to reopen all those cases as well.
Ooh.
So it's looking a bit, iffy for the Russians, But nothing is proven, as the Home Secretary Amber Rudd said. You know, we've got to be careful that we don't, start shouting wolf until we see him.
Now, there was a case, though, I recall many, many years ago, of a Russian emigre, maybe a diplomat, a former spy, I'm not sure, who died as a result of a contact with a ricin-tipped umbrella, as I recall.
He was Bulgarian.
A Bulgarian, okay.
And yeah, that was Georgi Markov.
Okay.
He was crossing Waterloo Bridge when somebody stabbed him with an umbrella and pulled a release trigger and injected into his bloodstream a poison pill made from ricin, yes.
This is, all right, why, you know, this is fascinating, and I say that. We're talking about human lives, not the death of them is not fascinating, but this intrigue, why London? What's the relationship?
Well, that's a very interesting question, and well done for asking it, Lockwood.
Thank you very much.
London is very much an international city. It's very cosmopolitan. But recently, it's become a center for Russian oligarchs in a huge way. Because London is a big financial center, they are running their money through the London laundromat, so to speak.
Wow. All right.
And in fact, the Deutsche Bank reckons that $160 billion over the last few years, and they cannot be more precise than that because it's obviously illegal, but $160 billion has flowed into Britain through Eastern Europe, most of which is coming from Russia. East European and Russian oligarchs are buying up property in central London, huge amounts of property. They reckon something like 36,000 properties in central London are owned by people connected with the Russian mafia.
And London is one of the most expensive real estate markets in the world.
Well, right, that's one of the reasons it is one of the most expensive.
Okay.
And the reason they do it is so that they can claim a domicile in Britain in order to get around Western sanctions. Ooh. You see, they claim a domicile in Britain, move their assets into Britain through this domicile, and then get around the Western sanctions. And then they come over here to London, they spend their money. But for at least half the year, all these properties are completely empty.
Wow. All right. Now,
it pushes up the property prices elsewhere in London.
Okay. Now, the other question goes to, and we've talked about this so many times, it's almost, it's getting tiresome. But what about the impact of the potential departure of the United Kingdom from the European Union? What impact would that have on this relationship with Russia, which is, of course, now questionable?
If anything, it would make it closer, because I think you've got all this money and, you're going to need it. You're going to need the money more because you're going to be losing money from the EU.
So the attraction is, you think, that the United Kingdom would be a little bit more responsive then to Russian investment, is what I'm hearing.
Yes, I think probably it would be. At the moment, they have the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia over here, and everyone's screaming about human rights.
Right.
And the government say, well, we'd like to see them invest some of their money in the UK a bit more.
Well, you know, It is an international city. Now, that is a fact. As a matter of fact, a banking center for Europe, but also, of course, the renowned center for insurance. Of course, that in many regards is banking as
and
well.
And commodities.
And commodities. But Lloyd's of London is located there, of course, in London. Go ahead.
Let me just say one thing about London is it's an international center for many, many things. New York is an international center for finance.
Right.
London is an international center for film, theater, television, finance, government, diplomacy, international agencies, the whole range of things, industry.
Let's talk about that for a quick second in relationship to Brexit. That's the case for London and has been historically. Now, with the potential Brexit the departure of the United Kingdom from the European Union. Will that radically change, in your opinion, Tom? I'm a little skeptical. I think that much of what is in London will stay in London.
Well, a lot of the London's wealth is based on what they call the city, the financial sector.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And the government is trying very hard to say that a special case should be made by the EU for the financial sector. They reckon that the financial sector would lose about 25% of its income. And the financial sector contributes 10% of the GDP for the UK,
mm-hmm.
almost all based here in London.
Right.
But the EU is saying, no.
Well,
the financial sector these days, the way it works is it can be run from anywhere.
Yes.
And Paris is very happy, and so is Frankfurt.
Well,
so is Dublin.
Yes.
To pick up the slack.
Yes, but the other aspect of this, and I hold this as a key also for the United States as well, there's something unique about the freedoms in the United Kingdom and its stability. We'll leave it at that for the moment, but I think that there are certain aspects of
There
are certain aspects.
Except the British law.
Yeah. And these are intangibles that many countries or many financial institutions are very aware of. We'll talk about that at a later date. But I think there's still some great potential there in spite of the conflicts associated with the European Union. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio joining us this afternoon. And just to remind you, yes, this portion of the program has been pre-recorded to accommodate his sleeping schedule. It's almost midnight there as we are airing this live here on the talk station FM 107 and AM 1240. Tom, I'm still fascinated by that story we were just chatting about a few moments ago, and I'm going to tease it for those who missed it. And that is the fact that there are, unfortunately, indications that Russian spies are active and sadly taking out, and I mean literally as well as figuratively, former expatriates, possibly folks that have turned state's evidence, if you will, on the Russian oligarchy and the Russian government. And it's a topic that I think is worth observing and probably talking about in the future. Well, let's talk about items here in the States for a moment. Let's talk about the reaction to President Trump's announcement earlier this week related to tariffs.
Everyone loves them. Oh, they think it's wonderful.
Why?
If you believe that, it definitely is fake news.
Okay. What's the concern? And by the way, is Europe feeling a threat of this? This was focused, if I'm not mistaken, on Mexico, Canada, China for sure.
But no, everything that's been reported over here is the nasty things he's been saying about the EU. No, Europe provides as much, in January at least, it provided as much steel as Canada.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Europe is a big trading partner in many respects. The European Commissioner for Trade went on television the other day to say, we can't understand it. We understand one of the biggest reasons for this is national security. Why are we threatening him? Are we threatening to send missiles to the United States? Are we a military threat to the United States? How is the EU a threat to America's national security? So they can't quite understand it. There was an interesting piece in the BBC which said it's not America. It was Anthony Zerker again, who's one of my favorite writers. He's saying it's becoming clear that it's not America first as a policy. That the policy instead now is America decides. as well, a policy.
You know, the other aspect of this, and by the way, there is still close ties with the European Union, particularly through NATO. And of course, of particular note, and this is something that resonates with our local community, and that is, of course, the F-35. Many of the parts are made by various countries. Italy, France, UK are making various parts for these airplanes. There are still some close ties. I find it
still.
I find it fascinating that this is an issue related, of course, to the industrial complex for the United States and the president's concern that given some significant event, such as warfare or some other event in the world, the United States needs to be prepared to provide its own services and steel and aluminum products. So I assume that that was also understood there in the media there.
There's several things they pointed out. One is you don't produce anymore enough iron ore of a high enough grade to make all the steel that you require because you're the world's largest steel importer. The Mesabi Range has been mined out of high-grade ore. Most of the ore you get now is from places like Australia. And the reason is simply because you just don't have it anymore. You still get a lot from melting down scrap metal, four times what you get from the ranges, from the iron ore mines that are still in operation. So, you know, where are you going to get this iron ore to make the steel? It doesn't make sense. It's not linked up. It's not holistic. And I just want to quote Adam Smith. And I won't quote Adam Smith. I'll paraphrase him. I'll use another example. And that is, If you need a table for your dining room, you can either make it and it will take you a month and it will cost you several thousand dollars, or you can go out and buy one in the shop that costs you $400 and you can do it in half a day, and the rest of the time you can earn more than enough money to buy the table, the chairs, and everything else.
That's a paraphrase. Why do the job when you can pay to get it done cheaper than you yourself can do it? All right.
Yes.
Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio and Look Ahead Economics as well. Real quickly, we've got to move on to a few other items here. The impact of this threat of tariffs yet to be determined. And of course, the fact that now we've had the president's financial advisor announce his departure. Is there a feeling that this possibly is more just a rattling of sword, if you will? What's the
attitude? How can you tell with Trump? You just can't tell, can you?
Good. That's exact. Well, that at times he does keep people on their toes, does he not?
Yeah, but that's not necessarily as good a thing as you think it is, Lockwood.
Well, so far.
Yeah, political uncertainty.
But wait a second. This does beg a topic. And that, of course, has to do with North Korea. We're probably going to have to take a break.
Me just go back to his political uncertainty for one second.
Sure.
The car manufacturers are not thanking him at this particular juncture in time. Their shares have just plummeted.
Well, the world is full of variety, and I'm confident that they're just temporary adjustments. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon. North Korea, South Korea, and disarmament. Just a real quick question, then we'll come back and discuss this right after the break. Is that something that the European press is paying close attention to?
Absolutely.
And has any...
No.
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 What is the question?
They're not giving credit to Trump.
Oh.
Not yet. Not yet. They may do. They have highlighted his recent tweet. Nothing's settled yet sort of thing. We have to be careful, you know, about what they're saying. And I think Trump is probably right, because I think North Korea will want to have some strings attached to this, which he may not agree with, such as pulling out the high defense missile system in South Korea and possibly reducing or withdrawing altogether American troops in South Korea.
But you know, what's fascinating about this, Tom, is that this has generated this reaction from Kim Jong-un. And I have to say that this is closer to conversations than we've had in many decades with the North Koreans.
Well, I think probably the Clinton administration was the closest one, didn't it? I can't remember.
Well, the Clinton administration is the one that also basically acknowledged that North Korea could develop its nuclear program. I mean, that is an argument. Okay, we've got to take a break on that. We'll come back to that very quickly here with Viewpoints Around the World and Tom Arms. You're listening to Viewpoints Around the World on the Talk Station.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
Observations of an Expat by Tom Arms from LookAheadNews.com. Trump's threatened tariffs are not part and parcel of an America First policy. They are part of an America Directs policy. Or even better, an America Dictates policy. Many would say that such a policy is no more than a continuation of a reality that has existed since 1945. They have a point. But at least it was nominally linked to a morality-based system. Trump's policies are tied to vengeance and greed. We're tired, he bleats, at being taken advantage of. The rest of the world has been laughing at us for too long. So he is going to tell the world what it must do. This is clear not just from the threatened tariffs on steel and aluminum. It is becoming all too obvious from NAFTA negotiations, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and the backroom free trade talks between Britain and America. Trump appears to be coming to the reluctant realization that pulling out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership may not be the unmitigated wonderful thing that he thought it was. He thought the TPP would fall apart without America, and he could pick off each of the individual members with a series of bilateral deals. He was wrong. It was difficult, but the 11 remaining members of the TPP have gone ahead and forged an agreement without Trump. Just before Davos, 25 senators sent him a letter urging him to reconsider membership of the TPP, both for the sake of American jobs and world peace. At Davos, he publicly mused on the possibility, but only on his terms. His musings were not well received by those who stayed in the reduced TPP. The Chilean president, Michelle Bachelet, said the TPP cannot be redone to please the U.S., and Japan's chief negotiator, Kazuyoshi Umemoto, said it would be too difficult to renegotiate to accommodate the Americans. NAFTA, or as Trump tweets, the worst trade deal ever, is on the veritable brink of collapse. The 25% tariff on steel has just thrown another spanner into negotiations, especially since Trump tweeted that the tariffs would definitely go ahead unless Canada and Mexico agreed to his demanded changes to NAFTA. Britain is counting on a free trade agreement with the U.S. to replace a big chunk of the European market it is losing with Brexit. Every time a British Remainer warns a Brexiteer about the economic dangers of leaving the EU, they are told, "Ah, but we're going to have a free trade deal with America, which will be even better than the one we have with Europe." Indeed, President Trump has promised a great free trade deal. Theresa May has declared herself delighted at the prospect. And Brexiteering Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson is positively salivating and rubbing his hands in gleeful anticipation. The Brits are only just now discovering that Trump was thinking in American terms when he talked about a great deal. Officially, there are no talks taking place until Britain leaves at the end of March next year. Unofficially, pre-Brexit UK-US talks have been quietly underway for some months, and the signs are bad for the UK. Britain has been told that if it wants greater access to US markets, then it must accept steroid-produced beef and chlorine-washed chickens. Not only do the British not want those products, but if they accept American demands, EU regulations will make it impossible to sell many processed food products onto the European market. Even more revealing is the US position on air traffic across the lucrative North Atlantic route. British Airlines currently benefit as part of an EU-US Open Skies Treaty. But US negotiators are now demanding that as part of the post-Brexit world, a big chunk of the routes filled by British planes would be replaced by American. US negotiators are in a position to walk away from the table. Not so the British. Donald Trump is a product of the down and dirty, no-holds-barred world of New York real estate. His cabinet and chief negotiators are hard-nosed businessmen. They look at the world through win-lose spectacles of the boardroom rather than the political prism of compromise.
We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints on the talk station, FM 107 AM 1240. Actually, viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And I think just a few moments ago, Tom actually came close. Didn't hit the mark yet on crediting President Trump for successful changes in the world politic. And then, of course, that was with North Korea. I said close, Tom.
Your loony London liberal has credited him with things in the past. I'm not quite ready to credit him with world peace yet. Even East Asian peace. I think that North Korea and I think by association China might be wanting to extract a price which he may not be prepared to pay.
Let's talk about China, because this is a big story. And I mean, this is quite frankly, Tom, this may take up a good portion of our conversation. What's happening in China? And by the way, I've got to credit you. You suggested this might be the case. We have almost a premier for life, it seems, and possibly yet Chinese royalty by default. What's happening in China?
First of all, he's president, and have lifted the term limits on his presidency, Xi Jinping.
Mm-hmm.
And he was restricted to two terms, and now they're going to say he can stay for basically as long as they want him to stay, which means really, in essence, as long as he wants to stay.
Right.
This raises the specter of Mao Zedong and people like that. You know, for a long time, we thought the Chinese were joining the real world, almost the Western world. The accepted political restrictions and things like that,
but they're not.
They're slipping back.
Well, wait a second.
That's
Tom,
absolutely true. They are slipping back.
Tom, the reality here is, and I think we all are to blame for this. This is a culture that is over 2,000 years old.
3,000
now. That's correct. And Xi Jinping is just indicative of a culture that has withstood the challenges of time and wars. And in the process, and I've got to ask a question back to North Korea, is there, do you think, an effort on the part of China forcing Kim Jong-un into negotiations and conversations? I mean, we have now an individual who is very, very ensconced in his position. I said Premier President Xi Jinping. It strikes me that in some regards, the negative is possibly a positive, because he now has the strength to bring, if you will, some reason to the region, while at the same time strengthening his military and economic muscle.
I think you're absolutely right there. I think you also let's look at this holistically, because at the same time as they have taken away the term limits, they have increased defense spending.
Mm-hmm.
By 8.1%, and that is a big jump. That's more than the growth in the GDP, and it's a continuing increase year on. I think last year was up by 7.5% or something. So every year they are increasing defense spending by more than the growth in GDP. It's still about 1/6 of what it is in the U.S.
Okay.
But the Chinese are focusing their defense efforts on East Asia.
Right.
They get essentially more bang for the buck than the U.S. because the U.S. has global commitments,
mm-hmm.
which it has to meet with its expenditure.
And by the way, what role is Europe playing in those global commitments? Is there a greater awareness that the European community needs to step up? I know that the UK has.
There's a greater awareness, but okay. I think there are, you have a problem here within Europe. There are several problems, and one is, and what you really mean by Europe, you mean Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with Germany is it still cannot get over the guilt from World War II.
Well, this is
and I know people in America think, oh well, it's a long time ago and everything else. Not in European eyes.
Right.
It is not.
Yes. And of course, we talked about this in relationship to the Holocaust and Poland. And yeah. By the way,
it was just yesterday here.
Yeah. And quite frankly, it is. And by the way, I've got to ask, since that brings that up. Of course, the movie The Darkest Hour with Gary Oldman playing Sir Winston Churchill. Has that movie made it to the UK? And have the I've got to bring that up very quickly. Have they made any comments about that movie?
Oh, yes, they love it.
OK,
they think it's great. I haven't seen it, I'm afraid. I wanted to, but I haven't seen it. But no, they think it's very good.
OK, I just bringing up World War II came into that conversation. All right, let's move on to a few other. Well, wrapping up with China and the increase in military budget and President Xi Jinping, president for life. Is there a sense in Europe that this is of grave concern?
Yes, it's certainly they want to have an open China.
OK,
they want to have as free and open a China as possible. They don't want a China which is authoritarian and holds itself up as a model for authoritarianism in opposition to their democratic model.
Well, it's happening, and we're seeing this, interestingly enough, and we're neither of us are prepared to get into the depths of this, but the fact that China now is telling the global community, particularly the internet community, how they're going to run their businesses. And sadly, the digital community, Amazon, Apple, Google, et cetera, have all pretty much towed the line with Xi Jinping and China. And I think this is of grave concern. I do see this as a potential conflict.
Yeah, well, they're businesses and they want to make money.
Right. Well, it's also freedom.
Well, personally, I would say forget the Chinese. If I was running Facebook, I'd say, you know, let's concentrate on the rest of the world.
And freedoms. All right. Moving on to other items. Let's talk about some elections. We've got one in Italy and we've got the German coalition. Let's start with the Italian election. What's happening there? And this is a big issue because it does, in fact, influence the European Union, does it not?
It does, very much so. You know, Italy is now the third biggest economy in the EU. Mm-hmm. The UK is going to be leaving, and they have been in a mess for years. It's another vote against the establishment. It really is a vote against the establishment. It's also very interesting that it sort of split the country between north and south. There's always been this big north-south divide,
mm-hmm.
And now you have it more pronounced than ever, with the north moving really to the far-right populists and the south being more a combination of a neo-Nazi group called the Brothers of Italy and the Democratic Party. Berlusconi was more or less, he's now become a thing of the past, it looks. People didn't like his facelift, apparently.
Right. and I think his previous experiences were coming to haunt him as well. He was shamed out of office. But I'm fascinated the fact that the northern regions of Italy are more populist and less inclined for a global approach to the economy in light of the close proximity to Switzerland, France, Germany, and the enterprises that are there. You've got a large, isn't northern Italy a significant industrial base?
It is, but what's called something called the Northern League did very well. The Five Star Movement and the neo-Nazis did better in the south, and in the center was the Democratic Party.
Okay.
The Northern League is very is quite far right. It's very racist. They really campaign on almost a racist platform, not an anti-immigrant platform, but a racist platform.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they did much, much better than expected.
I think we've done that. I want to go to Germany here for a moment before we go to the break. We've got a few other items we're going to try to reach into. Let's talk about Germany. I mentioned that a few moments ago. What's the status related to Angela Merkel's coalition? How solid a coalition is it? And what does this mean, again, for the European Union?
It's difficult to say yet how solid it is, you know, whether it will last the entire 4 or 5 years. It's a bit wobbly. And the reason it's wobbly is because she has given the SPD the portfolio for finance.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a very, very top portfolio. And the CDU, CSU, people who support Angela Merkel are not happy with it.
Okay,
so
now
they are unhappy with their own leader.
All right. Now, and of course, this is a parliamentary procedure, so this is a situation where she has to build coalitions. I want to move on to an issue in Turkey here in a moment. But question: what does this all mean for NATO as well as the European Union?
I don't think the coalition in Germany would make much difference to NATO, unless you're thinking, would it mean more spending on defense? I don't think, you know, all the parties are committed to defending to defense spending, increasing it in lip service terms.
Okay,
it's just politically, it's very difficult for all of them to do it.
We will be interested, of course, here in the States, because so much of our military expenditures on European Union and, well, the European countries and NATO. The other aspect, and I want to touch on this briefly before we go to the next break, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon. Actually, this evening, we're pre-recording this. Turkish journalism is dead. That's a pretty strong statement. What's happening in Turkey?
They've locked up more journalists than any other country in the world. And it would seem like the government is using a carrot and stick approach. Most of the newspapers, like anywhere, are part of a big conglomerate, which has several industries in the conglomerate, and the media is only one branch of it. And so they're handing out contracts to these media conglomerates, or conglomerates which include media, so that if they have, for instance, interest in media and mining, they get a big government mining contract.
Mm-hmm.
But if their journalists don't do exactly what the government says, they lock them up.
Gotcha. And you know, this is interesting, Tom. We've seen so many, and very brief comment on this before we go to the break. We're seeing the rise of, I want to try to avoid the word despots or tyrants, but Xi Jinping in China. We've got President Erdogan in Turkey. We have Syria. We have questions in Iran. It strikes me that there's a new political environment. Your thoughts?
They, a lot of people call it managed democracy.
Mm-hmm.
Or illiberal liberalism.
Okay.
I think managed democracy is better. They still have elections.
Right.
And everyone votes.
Right.
And the votes are counted.
Right.
But the fact that the government, government controls the media.
And the outcome. And the outcome. Yes.
Yeah. Well, they don't necessarily control the outcome. But, they will control the media, and they won't control the polling stations. And then once they get into office, they regard it as a vote to allow them to do whatever they want to do, a mandate to do whatever they want to do.
I think that's...
And that, I think, is dangerous. There are no checks.
No.
There's no checks and balances on their power anymore. They pack the courts. They lock up the journalists. Once I'm elected, I can do what I want.
This is a topic we're going to have to discuss at a later time, because I think it's an important one. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio with us this evening here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio joining us this evening. It is nearly midnight, so he is soundly asleep, I'm pretty confident, but we are airing this program. It was pre-recorded earlier in the afternoon. Tom, I want to touch on two quick items. One very quickly, because I do want to, I'm always looking forward to the denouement, the ending of the program, the unraveling, the special story here about a snail race.
Oh, I thought you meant when I hang up.
No, and that's another one, too. That's some in the audience might agree with that one. But I'm looking for the story about the snail race. But before we do that, very quickly, Colombia's FARC leader, that's F-A-R-C, he is, that is the and the acronym, of course, for the revolutionaries there in Colombia. Their leader, which, how many years now has this revolution been ongoing there in Colombia?
Half a century.
Half 50 years, all right. The leader of the revolutionary party is ill. What does that mean for the future? Because I know Colombia has worked out a negotiation.
I just put it in because I thought it was a bit of a sad story. Because I always think it's a great thing when these terrorist groups come in out of the cold,
right,
and agree to take part in the democratic process. And, what they've done over half a century was terrible. You know, what they did,
right,
to the cocaine train and everything else. But, you know, when it comes to an end, it's a big jump for anyone to make.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't say I admire him, but because he was a terrorist, but I certainly appreciate the fact that he has come in out of the jungle and has agreed to take part in the democratic process. And here he was, set to take a seat in the Senate, and he's now in critical condition with a heart condition.
Okay.
There'll be another leader of FARC. It's not going to derail the agreement.
That's what I was wondering, if it would derail the agreement. But you don't think it will at this point. This is a story that comes close to us here in the States, since it's in our hemisphere, and that, of course, Colombia. Let's wrap it up with a snail race. Pray tell.
Yes. Well, the absence of a snail race at the famous snail race at the Union Inn in Dartmoor in Devon, which takes place every year, except this year.
Why?
Because, let me see if I can find this quote from the publican, the man who owns it. Quote, "The cold snap has led to a medical condition with our racing snails. It is called hibernation."
They're sleeping out the race. Tom Arms.
Well, it's so cold, they've just gone back into their shells and they won't come out to race.
The snail race has been called off for 2018. Is there a chance that it could be rescheduled by any?
They did say that, assuming the French chef keeps his hands off them.
Escargot?
That,
okay.
That they will have it. They will reschedule at a later date.
Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio with us this evening on the breaking news about the snail race belt that there won't be having. When was it scheduled, Tom?
It was scheduled this past weekend.
Oh, my goodness. We had reporters ready to go. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, good evening to you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Lockwood.
Viewpoints around the world.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of The Talk Station.